Do you need help protecting your finances as you enter retirement? David Dickens of KC Financial Advisors has got you covered. Welcome to the Cover Your Assets KC podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Cover Your Assets KC podcast. I'm Walter Storholt alongside David Dickens, President and Wealth Advisor at KC Financial Advisors, serving you throughout Kansas City with an office in Overland Park. You can find us online at coveryourassetskc.com. David, great to be with you this week. Are the Thanksgiving leftovers finally getting worked through in your household?
I think we've almost put them all behind us.
What's the first food that gets eaten through? The most popular one, obviously, and then the one that's like the straggler where you can't quite finish it off and you have to say goodbye to that one.
Well, the pecan pie is always right at the top of the list.
That goes by pretty. That doesn't stay a leftover for long, right?
Actually, sometimes it doesn't even make it to leftover status.
I can imagine that, yep.
And, you know, the turkey carcass, most people just throw that out, but I like to make soup out of that. So
ooh, okay, good call.
That's still in a Ziploc bag in the freezer waiting its turn.
Nice. What? So you just use like a chicken stock and then add the ribs to it, or do you like make the whole stock from like the very beginning with the turkey carcass?
Just throw that carcass in there and boil it in a big old pot.
Making your own stock, essentially.
A couple, 2 hours, and then you're ready for action. You can do rice. You can do noodles. Just as long as you got some leftover turkey, you're in good shape.
I like that. Oh, we may just try that this year then. I think we still have the carcass left. So
perfect.
I won't throw it. I was going to go throw it out right after this episode.
Oh my gosh! I'm glad we had this little chat.
Now I won't put it to waste. I love it. So you are definitely a subscriber to the Thanksgiving thought of let nothing go to waste. It sounds like you make sure everything gets used.
I'm an old pilgrim at heart.
An old pilgrim. I like that. That should be the title of our episode today. The old pilgrim at heart.
Well, maybe not. Yeah. Let's go with what we planned.
Speaking of things nobody says these days, I'm an old pilgrim at heart being one of them. That's the topic of our show today, things nobody says, but with a financial spin to it today. So I'm going to throw out some statements, David, and I'm kind of guessing that you've probably never heard a client or a potential client actually say these things. So my guess is you hear something that's more like the opposite of these things, but we'll see. Maybe we'll surprise ourselves here and you'll have actually heard somebody say this. All right. Here's the first one. I'll start you off with an easy one. I really regret putting money into my Roth IRA every year.
Yeah, I've definitely never heard that.
Wish I hadn't have saved more. Darn it.
But you know what? I've never actually heard. So everybody that listens to the podcast know that I'm a huge Roth IRA fan for a variety of reasons, which we'll probably at some point during this podcast touch on. But I've also never heard anyone say that they wish they'd saved less in their 401k, their tax-deferred account. So saving is a good thing. And if you happen to stuff it into your Roth, all the better when you retire because that money comes out tax-free. So, you know, when somebody's done all of their savings in a regular 401k or an IRA, I have seen some pretty stunned looks when they realize that all of their savings is tax deferred and the IRS has a claim on 20 or 30 or more percent of that, and they have no idea what the claim is going to be 5 or 10 years from now if tax rates go up. But what I would say is for people that wish they had more in a Roth IRA, there are really two ways to do that. When you're working, you can just make contributions to your Roth IRA, or if your company is nice enough to offer it, a Roth 401k. So that's a terrific way, if you're still working, depending on your tax rate right now. Go back to an old episode and you can listen to how you make that decision. But once you're done working, you can also do Roth conversions. And it doesn't matter how much you make, it doesn't matter how old you are, it doesn't matter any of that stuff. You can always do a Roth conversion to get more money into tax-free status and out of tax-deferred status. So if you're looking for a really good New Year's resolution, financial New Year's resolution, and those are top on everybody's list, how can I think more about finances during the new year? But if you happen to do that, then if you're still working, sit down and make a determination before the calendar flips. Should I be putting money in my company's 401k or the Roth 401k? Figure out, calculate which one's right for you now. And if you're retired, make that calculation as to whether or not you should be doing a Roth conversion this year, a series of them over the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, or if you're one of those people where it doesn't make sense. But back to your original point, I have never heard anyone say, oh, I wish I didn't have a bunch of money in that nasty old Roth IRA.
Yeah, that's very true. And the good lesson to be learned from that, you mentioned it's not just Roth IRAs, but really any savings account. Even though you hear people say, oh, you can't take it to the grave with you, make sure you have fun with that money. You still never see people regretting saving too much money for their retirement. It just doesn't happen. I'm guessing people also don't say this, and that's in retrospect. You know, I should have spent more and saved less over the years because now I don't know what I'll do with all this money before I die. That's same mentality, right?
That's rarely a conversation I have. It's funny, over the decades, I'm going to relate it to baby boomers, but I'll bet it was the same for the greatest generation as well, and probably for the generations coming. The number one concern of baby boomers still is, am I going to outspend my money? Or the corollary to that is, how much can I spend in retirement without running out of money? So, you know, if you've done a good job of saving for yourself, I've got clients that have a lot of money that they're not going to outspend, and clients that could absolutely outspend their money, but they're all kind of worried about the same thing. How much is it okay to spend? So there's a common rule of thumb. Everybody's likely heard of the 4% rule. You can Google it, read about it. But it's kind of a blunt tool to say, well, if I want to make sure I don't run out of money, have a very high probability of never running out of money in retirement, I'm going to follow the 4% rule. If you saved $1 million for retirement in your 401k, that means you can take out $40,000 in the first year, plus your Social Security. Maybe you make 70 grand of income, and you're sitting there thinking, wow, I saved $1 million, and including my Social Security, all I get is 70 grand. But that's the 4% rule. A better way to do it, to determine if you want to not have a whole bunch of money left over when you leave, is you just want to have a detailed income plan, a retirement income plan that you update annually that's specific to you, not the blunt 4% rule, but something that's specific to you, your age, your life expectancy, your marital status, your risk tolerance, and then your tax situation. So figuring out how much to spend each year in retirement as a safe number, that's a super important exercise to do, and I'd be inclined to use a detailed plan and not a blunt tool. But however you do it, make sure you do it.
That's a great point, David, and very, very true. All right, things nobody says. These are the statements that we never really hear from anybody. In fact, the opposite is usually what we hear. We never hear anybody say, you know, the life insurance payout I got when my husband or significant other died was a little insulting because it's like they thought I couldn't handle the finances without some help.
True. That has never been said, I'm sure. Life insurance is something that people typically don't want to talk about. Most people, including me, don't like life insurance companies, but you sure like the benefit. If something happens where you lose a loved one and you're in financial need, and then that tax-free pot of money comes your way. So I think about a couple of different situations that I see pretty often and how you might handle that. So if you're young married with kids, so usually what you get from your company is maybe one times or two times salary in a life insurance policy that a lot of times they'll pay for. The important thing to understand about that is it is highly likely that that is not enough. If you leave that to your spouse and you're in your 30s or 40s, your spouse and kids are going to run out of money. They're certainly not going to maintain their lifestyle. So you need to go through a calculation to say, well, how much should that be? So I'm sure, Walter, you will end up saying, well, let's just put a link to that in the show notes. But if you Google, if you go to bankrate.com/calculators/insurance, it's one of the best calculators I have ever seen that will help you calculate, well, based on who I am and where I am and how many kids I have and how much I make and how much I spend, how much life insurance should I have? Maybe it's zero. Maybe it's a bunch more than I have. But you'd want to know that before you leave us, while you can still get it. And so it's a super important calculation. And, you know, that's your second thing you'll add to your New Year's resolutions. Make sure you make that calculation. Another situation I've seen before is if you're in your 50s, married, saved too little, but your thought is, now I'm going to get serious about retirement savings. And let's just say that 6 months from now, you die of a heart attack or a bus hits you or something else super unforeseen. Well, that leaves your spouse having saved a lot too little, and a major earner is gone. So just because you're in your 50s doesn't mean you don't have a need for insurance. It's probably, though, a super cheap term life insurance policy, kind of like the young person with kids is going to have. And then a third situation, there are 10 situations that I see all the time, and I've chosen three of them here. But the third one would be, you're in your 70s, you have those pesky required minimum distributions coming out of your 401ks and IRAs, but you don't need them. And so you have a choice. You have to take them out, you pay the taxes, and then what do you do with that money? Well, you can plop it into a taxable brokerage account, or you could buy a certain type of life insurance policy that's going to pay somebody a pot of money that's tax-free. How do you turn tax-deferred money, IRA, into tax-free money? Well, you can invest the required distributions into a life insurance policy. And what you want, more than likely, this is not a specific recommendation, but more than likely what you want is some stripped-down, super cheap, no bells or whistles, death benefit. Maybe it's a death benefit that pays off when the second of you and your spouse dies, and that's even cheaper. But take a look into that. If you're getting required distributions that you don't need, there might be a life insurance strategy that would provide a really terrific tax-free inheritance for your family instead of a taxable.
That's a great point, David, and I think it's always worth talking about life insurance. It's one of those things that people don't like to discuss, but if you can plan for it, if you can have those discussions, boy, everybody's going to be better off in the future for you having done so, because nobody regrets having a good life insurance plan in place. And as you said, we will link to that calculator that you mentioned at bankrate.com. We'll put that in the description of today's show. So if you want to access that tool and that resource that David just mentioned, again, we'll put a link in the description of today's show so you can go calculate how much insurance need you may have and that kind of thing. Very helpful. Something else that nobody says, it makes me feel really patriotic, David, to pay more taxes than I have to. You know, I just want to be the best American I can and be the number one taxpayer in the country, you know. So I don't enjoy finding ways to pay less. I want to pay more.
Yeah, that's not a very common thought in America or probably in Europe or anyplace else. There's a So I used to teach a class pre-COVID, taught a class on financial stuff. And there's a quote that we always go by over by a fellow named Judge Learned Hand. He was a federal appeals court judge, often called the most famous judge that never made it to the Supreme Court. But he is famous for saying that anyone can arrange his or her affairs so that their taxes can be as low as possible. You are not bound to choose the pattern which best pays the treasury. And so, frankly, most of my clients think very similarly to that. We do taxes for a bunch of our clients in addition to the investment work we do for them. So I see this up close and personal every year. I have never, Walter, I have never had a client say, oh, you know, that's okay. I really didn't want to use that deduction anyway. People are hungry for the deductions that they can legally take so that they can pay less taxes. So most of my clients look at it a lot like me, which is America's a great place. It's not free. So taxes are a necessary evil. I'm happy to pay the taxes that I legally owe, but I'm not volunteering to pay more than what I owe. And if there's a smart legal way to reduce my taxes, I'd really like to know about it. And so that's where if you're using a tax preparer instead of a tax planner, you might be getting super good tax preparation and never any ideas or advice on how to reduce your taxes either next year or into the future. So I'd encourage you, especially the more you make, make sure that you're getting some good tax planning advice in addition to, you know, tax preparation.
Yeah, I love that, David. I think that's really wise to give that guidance on the show. And yeah, nobody puts down Uncle Sam as their beneficiary, right?
No, not on purpose.
Not on purpose. That's maybe the key qualifier there. Not on purpose. Another story for another day, perhaps. I love the big market corrections, David, as we enter the final thing that nobody ever says. It's like a roller coaster ride. I used to love roller coasters when I was a kid. This is just a version of that as an adult. In fact, you know what? 2008 and earlier this year at the beginning of the pandemic, hey, these are probably my favorite years of all time, all this, you know, up and down.
you know, I get a lot of clients that say, they use that roller coaster phraseology with me too. And I think, so I have three daughters. When I was a young dad, we used to love to go up to Worlds of Fun and ride the big roller coasters. And there's a big one called the Mamba up there. It's all steel. It's super sleek. And you get to the top and you're just like, you're on the top of the world. And about 5 seconds later, you're at the bottom, like you were in a total free fall. And when I was a young guy, and my daughters, they loved that. It was such a cool feeling. But as I got older, I'm like, no, I got to get off this roller coaster ride. And frankly, that's what my clients are expecting me to do with their investments. There are numerous studies out there that will tell you that people, you know, they like it when their investments go up, but they absolutely hate it when they go down. In fact, most of them get really fearful when the market goes down. So, and then they end up regretting that they got greedy near the top. I will say, in the last month, I had a fella in my office who actually convinced me that he does like big market corrections because he actually does take advantage of them. And if that's you, it's really important to know your risk tolerance and how you react when markets go down big, which they more than occasionally do. So you've got to know yourself. For instance, let's say you're 40 and your 401k is $100,000. And like happened in this last March, it went down to 65,000 because it was mostly invested in stock. You lost about 35%. If you looked at that and said, oh, no big deal, I'm only 40, well, good for you. But let's fast forward about 20 years and say that now you've got $1 million 401k and you're 63, just a couple of years away from retirement. And now all of a sudden that $1 million is worth $650,000 last March. You've got to ask yourself the question, now am I fine with that? And if you are, then keep doing what you're doing. But if you're not, then now is a really good time to adjust those holdings to something that you are comfortable with. Because I don't know if it's 2021 or 2022, but most certainly during one of those years, we're going to have another 20 or 25% drop. And what you want to make sure is you don't do something silly because you got fearful and nervous when the bottom fell out of the market. Because we know for sure that that is going to happen sometime in the next 12 or 24 or 36 months. I think the last thing on that, Walter, that I would mention is you really need to know what is in those accounts. And usually it's a big old 401k that you've been just pounding away at every 2 weeks for years. And most portfolios that I review, when people come in and say, I'm thinking about retiring, how am I doing? When I do reviews on those portfolios, those people have way more stock exposure than they think they do. And that's why people are so surprised when the market goes down a lot and they look at their 401k statements and they've gone down a lot. Well, that's because we tend to pick the mutual funds that have gone up the most over the last year or two or three. And those happen to be stock mutual funds. So my guess is you're sitting there with a whole lot more stock in your portfolio than you think you do. And if you don't have a pretty high risk tolerance, then you're not going to love that big market correction next time it comes along. It's going to feel a whole lot like a roller coaster. And if you're not a big roller coaster fan, this is a really terrific time to make sure that you know exactly what you own and know your own risk tolerance. And make those changes when we're a lot closer to the top than when we're a lot closer to the bottom.
So many wise words on the show today, David, and that's great guidance and advice for us all. These are the things that nobody says. We often hear the opposite of what we've talked about on today's show, at least those headlining items, and then, of course, the explanation from David clarifying those things for us. But there's a reason why we don't say these other things, because they don't make sense. We want to do things that make sense in our financial lives and in retirement planning. And that's why David Dickens is here. He's there to ask your questions. If you have any on your mind, want to clarify anything you hear on the show, or go through the complete planning review process, you can get your own financial CPR, if you will, by going through the steps of the planning process with David and the team. If you want to get in touch and ask some of the questions that might be on your mind or inquire about coming in, or connecting, you can do that. 913-317-1414 is the number. That's 913-317-1414. And always online at coveryourassetskc.com. David, that was fun. Thank you for the help on the show today. And I'm getting ready to go throw that carcass in and make some good turkey soup.
Good. I want to know how that turned out.
I'll let you know. Hopefully it'll be tasty. I look forward to trying it out. But thank you so much, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Walter.
All right, that's David Dickens. I'm Walter Storholt. We'll talk to you next time right back here on the Cover Your Assets KC podcast. Investment advisory services offered through Brookstone Capital Management, LLC, BCM, a registered investment advisor. BCM and KC Financial Advisors are independent of each other.